Hello, everybody. Before we start the show, just a bit of a heads up. You may hear some echoing throughout the episode. It's here or there. It's not all over the place. We ran into a little bit of a snafu while editing, but still, this episode is so darn good. It is my favorite Road to Greatness just ever. So that said, sit back, relax, and let Kyle's intro just soothe your mind, soothe your soul. Let's get into it.
Sit back, relax, and join us as we live long and prosper. Welcome to The Road to Greatness, our Patreon-exclusive show where we deep dive into games we have been playing and sometimes a game voted on by you, our community. I'm your host, Kyle Stevenson, a.k.a. Mr. K-Sep, and as always, I'm joined on this never-ending road trip called life with Joseph Moran, a.k.a. Badbit, and two very special guests from the community, none other than Katie! And Jedi Hello. Master Ren. Today's destination is Star Wars Jedi Survivor, and yes, I know full well I quoted Star Trek and started Star Wars.
Yeah, you did.
How we doing?
It's like, I'm done. That's it. I'm done. Yeah, I'm out.
It's over.
Yeah. How dare you, Kyle? Listen.
I know full well that I'm only going to bring in my knowledge of the game here.
Okay.
So okay. I need to put my jabs in whenever I can.
Fair enough. Before I introduce everybody one by one, first and foremost, you may hear the AC in the back. I don't know. I'm paranoid about it. It is currently, let me see. You know what I hate when like weather people go, oh, it's 87, but it feels like 95. Well, then just it's 95.
Yeah, and it's 95 so it's, degrees, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's 95 degrees. It feels like it. Might as well be. Exactly. So if you hear it, my apologies, yeah. But we're going to, you know, so, we're going to survive.
Yeah, just like the game. Hey, oh, I like how you did there. Oh, yeah. You didn't even do that on purpose.
totally by accident.
I think before we get into the game, though, we all know Joe's love for Star Wars. I want to get to know Ren and Katie's history with this beloved franchise by millions and millions and millions of people. So, Ren, how long ago did you fall in love with Star Wars? Was it like instantly?
Well, so it was instantly, but the weird thing is, and I've told this story before, it wasn't from the jump. For years, I had a vendetta against Star Wars. And it was, yes, I know. We're pulling back the curtain. So the reason
it's all been a lie.
When I was a kid, I grew up, born in 96. So I was the early 2000s baby. Prequels should have been my Star Wars. Those should have been my jam. As those were coming out, marketing started going everywhere. You know, we've got toys in stores and everything. I saw the Vader mask and I wanted this Vader mask. So my parents are like, hey, you can get the Vader mask. You get good grades in school. We'll get you this Vader mask. So I got the mask and all I wanted to do, I'm like, all right, I got the mask. Now I got to see a movie. I got to see the movie where this character is in. Now, again, granted, I am like 6, 7 years old. Okay. I don't know nothing about this. My parents don't know anything about Star Wars. They still don't know anything about Star Wars. So I go into Blockbuster. That dates it where this was.
Oh, that's a name.
And, and we go in and I'm like, all right, I just want to see Vader. All I care about is seeing Vader. I go and I pick up episode 3.
I knew you were going to one of those. Yeah.
So now, ouch. Again, you got to put yourself in a 6-year-old shoes. I am sitting there for 2.5 hours watching a show or a movie I know nothing about, only looking for one character of the mask that I've got sitting right in front of me. And 2 hours go by and I'm like, I mean, he's got to be coming in at some point, right? Yeah. And then we get to the scene on Mustafar and he goes, you know, he's burned and then they bring him back. And I'm like, okay, now he is in the suit and we see him. And I'm like, all right. It's got to take off now. Vader's here. He's here. There's no way that they're going to run credits right now.
Cut to credits. And then
credits. Honestly, six-year-old Ren had the same feeling a probably 30 or 40-year-old man had as well. We're going to see him do something cool. They're like, no, you're going to have to wait another like 20 years on that one, bud. Like,
so, that's where I'm at. And I'm like, for the longest time, I'm like, you know what, George? Why couldn't you just release them all as a story? Just release it all one by one. That way I wouldn't have gotten into this mess. And I specifically remember my mother asking me, are you sure this is the one? And I said, yes, Vader's on the cover. This is the one. So it is all my fault. I understand that. So now we fast forward to the run up to episode 7. And I'm like, well, I can't go see episode 7. I'm obviously going to see episode 7. There's no if, and, or buts. J.J. Abrams is on it. Like, I loved him. So, but I'm like, there's 6 movies still deep. I got to go back and watch them. So I did it the right way. I knew what the mistake I had made. I go back and I watch A New Hope. Within 15, 20 minutes of that movie, I'm like, I love this. This is amazing. This is the best story I've ever seen. And I'm like, and had I just watched that one originally, I would have been a fan since 6 years old. And I realized that. So
you're just like, who's this pretty boy on the cover?
Yeah, literally.
AKA Hayden Christensen.
it started this entire train. And I mean, I've been running, at this point, 10 years deep. And I'm still, as my dad tells me, I mean, like, he's like, I mean, are you never going to not like Star Wars? I'm like, well, at this point, I don't think so, sir. I'm pretty sure I'm invested. I'm deep in this. I know stuff about this crap that I wouldn't even know that I do. And my wife is like, how do you know all this? I don't know. I really don't.
that story reminded me a whole lot. Are you guys familiar with the Patton Oswalt Star Wars bit?
Yes.
Where he runs into George Lucas and he's just like, George is, oh yeah, we're making episode one where you get to see all the characters when they're little. And he goes, oh, is Darth Vader going to be in it? And he goes, oh. Yeah, but he's a little kid. That's the whole thing that I was thinking of when you were telling that story. I was like, man. How disappointing that would have been.
I got that bit wrong. I was thinking of him when he like came out and said, this is how they need to bring back Boba Fett, and got it word for word. I'm blown away.
That was, I think, Parks and Rec, I think, right? When he.
Yep.
Yeah. That was great. Yeah. Katie, what about you? Where does your Star Wars history start?
It's the same kind of, not the whole Vendetta side of it, but it's not too different from Ren's in the sense that, I think I have glimpses of like brief memories of watching the prequels. The prequels are my Star Wars. They're the ones I've got introduced to first. I watched bits of it when I was a kid, but I didn't like fully get, ignore the dog, by the way. didn't get fully invested into it until the sequel trilogy, I will say. Cause it was like, obviously there was this whole big deal about it coming back and after, 10 years at that point, but they were continuing on from the story that was like, however long ago at that point, like 80s. So pretty much when it was episode 7 that came out, that's when I was like, right, I'm going to binge all these movies like properly and get fully invested. And that was obviously like prequels and obviously your OT and all that sort of stuff. And then once the sequels came out and I went and saw for the first time, I might add, that was my first cinema theater experience of Star Wars.
Oh, wow. No way.
The Force Awakens, which is like, obviously it was life changing for me. You know, it's not too long ago, if you think about it, 2015. But so it was like life changing for me and I'm forever thankful for it. But like, I'm also like, God damn, I'm annoyed at myself. Like, why couldn't I have been like this into Star Wars like now? Then, as I am now, because then I could have watched like prequels on the big screen, and that would have been insane for me, for my brain anyway.
Here's what I'm jealous about right here, right now. Y'all remember your first Star Wars memory? I do not. It's just ingrained. It's just always been there.
But that's a wild thing. That's another thing.
That's good.
Do your parents like it as well?
But they're not like over the moon. They're like, oh
yeah, that's what
like
my parents are kind of like. Yeah. My mother is more of a fan of it than my dad, but my mother was like, you know, she's kind of like the sort of person that like she sticks to one character, and her one character was Han Solo. Like, oh no,
it's fine.
Yeah. But once I went and saw The Force Awakens in the cinema, as I said, life-changing, literally, in the sense that like I literally dived into everything Star Wars at that point, like fandom-wise, good side, that's a whole thing. fandom, so like the TV shows, games, books, all that sort of stuff, like, and I will, for you know, because people like to, obviously don't want to go on a big tangent about it, but people, you know, like to bash on the sequel trilogy for this or that. But I will forever be thankful for it, because I wouldn't be probably like on here with you guys talking about this, for one, because I probably maybe wouldn't be into that sort of game. I don't know, but because I watched Star Wars and I got into it, of the amazing stories that they do tell and the characters that they bring into it, this awesome world building, universe lore, all that sort of stuff. And I'm like, I'm fully in, and I will forever love Star Wars. I mean, look at it. I got it tattooed on my body. So there you go.
Hell yeah.
Love it. You love to see it.
I also love, as you're both of you are talking about like your love of Star Wars, where it came from. Joseph's over here twirling a lightsaber in his hand.
I know.
The whole time.
He's showing it off. It's a PowerPoint.
Yeah, you know.
This is the Kyle Custis I was talking about on the mm-hmm. podcast.
Is that the limited?
This is the one. No. Okay. So I'll show you how big the limited run is. I know this is really great for a podcast of yours.
And you said that is quite a chunky, heavy lightsaber, crap. Right?
Yeah, it's
yeah. Real. This thing, you could literally beat someone to death with this. This one's actually like a hilt. So this one goes for $250. I think my brother said Saber Bay makes this one. It's the Survivor hilt.
That's not mine. Mine is blue and orange Mets colors from the game, so I don't know.
I still do have one over there, but it doesn't turn on anymore, and it's one of those knockoff ones from like Toys R Us when they were still around.
Oh, yeah.
That changed, it changed rainbow colors. So I'm like, it's not even like a proper one, but there you go. Yeah.
I love hearing all of this because, again, like my thing is whether you've just watched Star Wars 5 minutes ago and you're enthralled, to like me, who has been a Star Wars fan for 30 years. Again, I'm going to be 32. Like, it's been ingrained with me since birth. So, like, I don't remember my first Star Wars thing. It was just always there.
It's been always there.
It's just always there. It's so, to me, I love hearing when people are they get indoctrinated into the Star Wars fandom, because that is... There's no greater thing than first seeing something and falling absolutely in love with it. So
I
love all of this, man.
It's one of those, you know, when people ask you like, hey, like if you could go back in time, like where would you go to? And I've got three options, and one of them is 1977. So I could just see like Star Wars just take over the world.
Take over,
you know?
Take over.
It's kind of crazy.
That would be cool.
Amazing. That would be awesome. And like, Katie, you saw, didn't you go and you went and saw Return of the Jedi in theaters?
I did. That was, last? Awesome. Last so month, making, I think it was, something like that. So yeah. That was crazy. Because like hearing like Vader's lullaby at the end, it's like hearing that on the big screen, chills, all that sort of stuff.
I love when they re-release big things like that every once in a while.
They need to do the prequel trilogy. Please do that.
I watched Back to the Future that way too, the 20th or 25th anniversary. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like, dude, it's so good.
Yeah.
That said, Kyle, I have like the list for this game.
I wanted to start off with a couple things first.
Okay, go for it.
Like obviously, we all love the game.
Yeah.
On its base level, it's pretty great. But I want to start off with, I think, this game's biggest issue, at least for me personally.
Ooh, okay.
The performance. I said it on the show where I was like, I feel like this is this year's Days Gone, where it's a great game, but performance issues are like kind of holding it back. I know, Katie, you had some issues on the PC side of things, right? And even on the console thing, late game stuff, I was getting crashes and freezing and lost hours of progress.
Yeah.
And it just bummed me out. And just a little like loading into the saloon, like where you have to wait at the door forever. I'm like, oh my God, just get me in and out. I just need to talk to one person and back out.
You could tell that this game started as a PS4
yes,
Xbox
One 1,000%. So I just want to, you know, how did it perform for you, Ren, and for Joe, and obviously Katie, I want to hear about the PC side of things. So
nightmares.
Yeah. Ren, what about you? Did you have any like performance stuff while you played?
Yes, and actually, so I went back in. So, you know, obviously they fixed the Bounty Hunter trophy. So I'm still on my platinum run.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I did finish the Bounty Hunter one, so they did fix it. But there was the issue that I was having. I don't know if it was everybody else, but it was where you would go to the locations, and they're just not spawning. And I think that was the issue that was at hand, yeah.
But I feel like that was the issue for just, I feel like, I don't know if it was everywhere. But I feel like PlayStation definitely had that issue.
Mine was I would talk to Cage and she wouldn't tell me about bounties.
Yeah.
She straight up would not say anything. So I was like, all right, cool.
Like, all right, yeah. So I can't do anything. And I think that happened. That might have been tied, though. She might not have said anything because you have to have a certain amount of bounties for her to say, like, the next piece of whatever she's going to say. And they never showed up. So, like, it was very weird. But then... I still have the issue where Joe was talking about when you go into water and it drops to 30, that's still there. Like now, like as of 2 days ago. So it's like, stuff like that where it's like, man, y'all, I feel like it should have been a lot more ironed out. And especially now, obviously, I'm playing through Final Fantasy 16, and that is such a polished experience to have, you know, that out with this, and combat is somewhat similar, if not more intense in Final Fantasy, but yet that's very a smooth experience. I'm not seeing these frame dips, but yeah. In Jedi Survivor, it's egregious, and it's especially egregious in Kobo, and like you're saying, in that main area in the I don't even remember what the town is, but yeah, but either way, that just town that you're
the outpost, I think it was called, that, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So in the outpost, that's where it is the worst, and I saw a lot of, like pop in too when I would come in from like the
very much so
from like the cave areas or whatever. Mm-hmm. You're coming down from a hill, and then like as soon as, and I think I took a video of it, you could like, I look and there was no texture at all on the rock formation that was to the right of me. I looked to the left, looked back, it was there, and I was like, okay, same thing happened with the ship was gone, ship was not where I left it wasn't there. And then I looked, I was like,
someone stole my keys.
My favorite thing about the ship is like going to a different planet and waiting for Grease to say sit down, and he never says it, and it's just lights on the like in the windows, or better yet, you just see the planet and it's just stationary and there's no movement or whatever.
It's like I'm stuck. Okay, you're stuck in space.
Cool. And no, then it freezes and crashes like maybe 30 seconds later.
Oof.
Sounds similar to you know, with like the textures popping in and stuff. It sounds like Fallout 4 when you went to Diamond City, if you had played Fallout 4, because that was like that was that area of the game where the game just couldn't handle itself. I don't know.
it was so much.
So with me, I played it, as Kyle said, originally I pre-ordered it originally on PC. My mistake. As I found out. And, you know, I booted it up, and obviously at that point, I was, you know, I'd seen initial reviews of it being like, oh, it's quite a buggy mess. It's not performing that great. So I'm like, okay, my luck with games like that, like that come out broken, work well for me. Like Cyberpunk was fine for me. Mass Effect Andromeda is another one, was okay for me. But like superficial bugs, all that sort of stuff I can deal with. And I booted it up, and it was like, okay, it's running okay, you know. You have that first initial cutscene where Kyle's just being like led, and basically it was okay. It was a little bit stuttery. You had the first cutscene where you see the senator, and that's where basically that plan like falls into place, and you start doing like the tutorial little sections, like swinging the lightsaber, and I'm like, that was okay. It was literally, I feel like, after the climbing bit after that, and then you get to another combat situation where the stuttering and the lagginess just got turned from 0 to 100. And it was like that for literally the entirety of Coruscant, that first section of Coruscant. And I was like, well, I'm assuming it's because of all these lights and things like that. I know my PC's not the most up-to-date PC in the world. So sometimes I also think, is it my hardware rather than the game itself? But it never improved, and I didn't actually get off Coruscant in with the PC version, because I'm like, this, it was like borderline unplayable pretty much, because it was so laggy and so stuttery that I'm like, I wasn't having fun with the combat. It's not as smooth and fluid as I thought it would be, all that sort of stuff. So I bit the bullet immediately then and there, because I'd heard from other people that had got the game on PlayStation. It's not that bad for me. It's okay. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to refund this on Steam. I got it. I got my money back. So I was okay with that. I just basically lost nothing but time. And then I immediately ordered off Amazon the PlayStation version. And I booted it up. And honestly, apart from a bit of stuttering here and there and some bits, it was fairly seamless for me. I had it on performance mode the entire playthrough, and most of the time, as I said, sometimes it would drop a little bit. Most of the time it was 60. Yeah. It was 60 quite concurrent.
Yeah, for me, I found, you know, besides some jank here and there, and again, I think the first week, patch fixed a lot of my issues. The second week patch fixed almost all of it for me. But I will say, trying to go after the platinum in this game, yeah, that's actually where I experienced all the crashing.
Yeah.
Like, I crashed at least 5 or 6 times trying to get that goddamn plat.
Yep. Trying to get all those shards, and then
doing the dumb chess battles, and then, like, I'm about to win, and nope, done. Yeah. Just crash. That's aggravating.
It is a
problem. And yeah, I never, I actually didn't do the bounty hunting missions because I had what Ren said, and what I feel like, as I said, more people on the PlayStation side of things, I definitely thought I had, was just like, they just weren't there.
Yeah.
They weren't there at all. So, and like, I never did them. I do know, by the way, what is like the ending of that bounty hunting story, because I saw it on YouTube because they like to put things like that in thumbnails.
Yeah.
But yep. So that was a bit of a bummer, but you know, but there you go.
Yeah.
So let's,
can we talk about the trophies?
Oh, yeah. Go, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Let's talk about it real fast. Yeah. I like them.
Because since we were just talking about it, like, y'all know me. I'm not a huge trophy hunting guy. There are games that will get me to come out of my shell and branch out and try to. And this is definitely one of them. And I looked at Fallen Order's list, and that was not one of them. I was like, I'm not doing that with Fallen Order. But with this one, I'm like, okay, this seems feasible. But it's still, you know, as we're on the grind, I think 5 more trophies left, not including the platinum. Mm-hmm. And it's all grindy stuff. It's all just a grind. And I don't like stuff like that.
Oh,
and
again,
I'm
still doing
it. Yeah. I'm going to do it because I want this platinum. But at the same time, it's just like the priorite shards. Like, you don't have to get all of them, but you do have to get all of them if you want to buy all of Doma's stuff. It's like, you have to do this to get this to do
that. Is that actually one of the trophies? Yes. Is buying all her stuff?
Yep.
That, okay. Okay.
I'm
glad I'm not a trophy hunter. I'm just saying it.
The garden. It's like, you got to sit. I planted everything. Now you got to sit and wait for them to grow. I'm like, bro.
That was the last trophy I had. And I'm like, dude, what am I doing wrong? I'm planting all these goddamn space roses everywhere. What do you mean?
It's like Stargy. This isn't Stargy.
Exactly.
I think a lot of that stuff, Ren, the grind, like the shard stuff and whatnot, I think ties into another issue from the first game that I think is not that much better in this one, is that stupid freaking map. I still have so many issues with the map. Yes, it's way better than what Fallen Order was.
Mm-hmm.
But like, when it comes to
endgames, it's not much better. It's like, Fallen Order's one was down here. Yep. This one's here.
A little bit up. It's a little bit up. But like, when it comes to like finding the shards and whatnot, don't just tell me there's a collectible. Actually tell me where the shards are. Because I would go to a place and it's not a shard, it's something else, like a data disc or something. Like, well, I don't need those anymore.
Yeah.
Or like, where are the meditation points at? Like, where, tell me specifically what they are instead of making them just obtuse just to go out and find them.
I'm trying to look up a video for it.
I
understand exploration.
That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I understand exploration is a thing, but like, as you say, sometimes that's just, you can go too far with it. I don't know.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
I'm having that with Witcher 2 right now. I've been getting very ragey with Witcher 2 for the same reasons. It's an older game, but still.
And even just going around the world, I love the worlds. Maybe it's just me being a big dumb gamer. I want a little highlight of yellow. Tell me what I can climb on, what I can wall run. Like, I feel like the scratches, like in the rock surfaces, whatever, they're there, but they don't pop out quite as much to me to like notice.
I could see that, because I'm like, there are some times when I'm running around like in circles going, I'm pretty sure I'm meant to climb up here somewhere. Yeah, I feel like this is where the map is telling me to go.
I can't see where.
And I'm like, oh, it's right in front of me.
It was really bad in Jedha. Is where I was like, where, okay, I know I got to get on top of like these temples to solve the puzzle, whatever, but like, how do I get there?
And I think I like it and I don't like it at the same exact time. I think it should be
more of an accessibility feature,
but like, at the same exact time, that's why you see those tweets that make me so rageful. It's like, why does it have to be this obvious? It's like a box with like yellow on it, so you know you can break it. It's like, because players
then
will
you
not
know you
that
can
you
break
need
it.
To break it. Yeah, it's called trying to it's called just understanding a hint of design.
Yeah,
you know, it's like Twitter people say with like the 69. Last of Us. Like the Last of Us had like everything was covered in gold where you had to go kind of. And some people were like, it's too much, and I'm like, but. Some people wouldn't know to go that way. I don't know.
Exactly.
I like that kind of stuff, you know?
So sometimes like I like it. I'm like, oh, okay. So it's not totally in your face, but then there are other times where I get a little lost and a little frustrated by it.
Yeah.
So I totally understand that critique.
There was a spot where you find Cage. She's just where the first area that you see her in, and then you're supposed to go up. You're like, she's sitting on the ledge. You're supposed to get up there. That I got stuck there for a good 20-30 minutes. I'm like, I don't know where I'm supposed to go. And I saw it. I was like, oh, I can jump there.
There's even a I don't know what it is, a meditation point or something, where you have to go across the map in that area, and I forgot what the crystal things are, the purple beams that break the
Yeah.
Like force crystals?
Yeah.
No, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Whatever, yeah. Turns it away. You have to go across and aim it somewhere that's like almost at the point, like if you go much further, you're going to die just from like the world. And the map doesn't tell you that there's a cave down there. Yep. Or like you're on top and you look down and you can see where you go. So you try to jump down and then you die because you're not supposed to see it from up top. Yeah. Like it's just...
Though I feel like the map is an improvement on the first game, it still does need more work and detail, I think, is the thing that we're hitting on.
Absolutely.
It needs more detail. Yeah.
I mean, what this game does extremely well, I'm going to let y'all take it, is the story. I think the story is pretty great, but you guys are the Star Wars nerds.
Can I just add like something I think would actually work really well in Jedi Survivor? So you don't have to keep like... pausing it to look at the map, make sure you're going the right way.
Yeah.
The compass, like you have in like Elder Scrolls, God of War, like the bar at the top of the screen. Just give a stat so you can be like, okay, this is north, this is where this is that, this is that.
Or even every time. Like a Ghost of Tsushima, like wind. Something like Jedi power thing, just like, hey.
Yeah,
like...
because so when I was trying to like find all the, like, you know, you go back to Kobo and you're like, okay, this area is lit up green now, so you can go and explore it. Like, I was just basically, bringing the map up, putting a marker there, and I'm like, okay, am I going the right way 5 minutes later? Bring up the map again. Yeah. Five minutes later, bring up it up. And I'm like, I'd rather just, like, get the map up, put the, like, the marker on there that you can follow, and then you just have that compass and it tells you where to go. That'd be so much easier. Agreed. I hope they do that for a third game. Yeah. Please.
So here's what we're going to do when it comes to the story, okay? Now we're in Spoilerville, okay? We all love the game. We all know it has some faults, but we're going right into the spoilers because this is, at the end of the day, a spoiler cast. You have been warned. You have been, you know, alerted.
I think a Star Wars game, you need to have to... like the alarm, the Star Wars alarm.
The alarm,
yeah.
Oh, God, hell yeah. So, you know, it has been a little bit of time since I rolled credits. It may be for you as well. So I'm going to give a too long didn't read on what has happened in this game. So this game takes a few years after Fallen Order. Cal is now a seasoned Jedi. He is no apprentice. He's going it alone. He is going to infiltrate a senator who has some vile plans for him and something called the Hidden Path, right? That being said, though, here's where I'm going to take the story because it actually starts thousands of years before all of this. Two Jedis by the name of Centauri and Dagon find a hidden planet during the High Republic called Tantalor. They seek to build a new order hidden from the galactic interference until they are attacked by the Nihil, which are pretty much space pirates, the pre-bad empire. Dagon's ambitions and his feelings for Centauri lead him to abandon the order and try to start his own. Now, you find this out, again, during flashbacks. And when you first meet Dagon, you actually see him bleed his Jedi crystal for the first time you ever see anyone do that. You've read about it. You've never seen it. And it's cool as shit. So as Cal...
For someone who doesn't know what that means, what does that mean?
Sure. He's turning his lightsaber from whatever color, blue, green, whatever, to red.
Got it.
Because like there used to be like this whole thing like, oh, blades are synthetic, all that stuff. No. This is cool as shit. So Cal encounters him on Kobo, and that's also where he meets Grizz after his plan kind of goes awry. And so he meets Grizz. He goes on this little adventure because he gets a quest from the innkeeper. He runs into Dagon and this idea of this hidden planet. So Cal encounters Dagon, fights him, and the lore of the hidden planet and he finds out the lore of this hidden planet, and he goes to Seer for advice on his next move. And that is where he meets Seer on Jedha and Marin on Jedha, and Endor Kova for the first time in the game. You think Endor is dead from the first game because he's just a hologram, but no, he's a real person. You find out Seer works for the Hidden Path to preserve the Jedi relics / library. Now, this is important because this ties into Survivor is taking place the similar time around Kenobi. So Kenobi talks about the Hidden Path. You see it way more here in the game. They collect some artifacts, some relics, and they defend or fend off the Empire from fighting the secret base on Jeddah. We get a cool fight with the Driller, and Marin and Cal kiss. Ooh-wee. Cordova reveals a MacGuffin, a compass that could lead them to Tantalor, and he needs to find another piece that Dagan has in order to find the planet and perhaps a new base for the Hidden Path / the Resistance against the Empire. We find out, though, via Force flashback that Centauri betrays Dagan, cuts off his arm, and leaves him to dead. Or, where we found him in the game. He's been taking a bath for thousands of years, man. This dude is clean as shit.
Very
pruny. Dagan's plan was to find Tantalor, relocate to Tantalor, create an army to overthrow the Empire and build a new empire under Dagan's vision. He's very, very much is a mirror to Anakin. We clash with Dagan again with Bode, and Dagan escapes. Then we fight Ravis, Dagan's left-hand man. Kill him and reveal the location of the last compass piece and Dagan himself. We head over to find Dagan We find Dagan fighting against the Empire, and we should note, Dagan's forces, his pirate little force that he has, are defeating the Empire here. It's a fierce clash, but he is winning. That's where we go, and we fight Dagan. We head back to Jeddah with the good news of the compass, and then all of a sudden, it is stolen from us. We find out the Bode is not a good boy. In fact, he's a bad old man, and he is here to under the Empire's orders. He is an Inquisitor, and now we found the secret base. Vader comes in like a fucking badass. Kills Seer like a fucking champ. You chase after Bode, and that is where you find out you are not the only survivor. And Bode's true intentions were to take the plans for Tantalor and escape with his kid and just hide forever, because it's the most important thing to him is protecting that child. Well, we get to finding... We go into an Inquisitor base. This is now not out of notes. This is just out of memory, which is fucking cool as shit. We don't find Bode, but we find his kid. And then we find Tantalor. We confront Bode. We have to, at the end of it, kill Bode. Well, and now we are help raising his child.
When you find his kid, Bode interrupts at the end.
Oh, sorry, it is.
And they have a little...
Yeah, he runs off and
talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And Bode's like, I'm doing what's right for me, and that's saving my kid. I don't give a shit about anything else. It's the most important thing to me. It's a true gray Jedi ordeal. So at the end of it, we now have Cal with a secret base, but also having to raise a young, force sensitive child alongside Marin and Grease. And so that said, that's the story of the game wrapped up for you in the only way I know how with
on his trailers,
so
right?
Exactly. So, Katie, I go to you. This story, how did you like it, man? How did you did you love it as much as everybody else did? I know there's some people who are like, it kind of fell flat for me. I didn't jive with it that much. How did you feel about it?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it because I feel like the stakes felt like they were higher, because obviously this information that Cal discovers is really, really important to him and all that sort of stuff. It was such a strong story in terms of just characters and, you know, all the characters they bring back into it and all that sort of stuff. And obviously featuring the freaking High Republic in there, which I was not expecting. And I will say, I was reading the first High Republic book just before I started playing it. Mm-hmm. Which is like, that's convenient. That's really convenient. I'm like, when she was like, Centauri Kree came into it, and I'm like, okay, this is definitely like, I thought like, okay, Old Republic kind of era, what's going on here? And then as soon as she said, I feel like they say the Nihil, or do they mention Old Republic? I can't remember. Yeah. But as soon as they said like one of those names, I'm like, my mind was blown. I'm like, well, that's great timing. Good job, me.
Yeah.
And yeah, that just blew my mind. And then, and how the rest of the story plays out, like Jeddah, I feel like we'll dive more into certain things as we go on. But like the Jeddah sequence with the drill, one of my favorite sequences, I think, in gaming, I will say, in recent memory anyway.
That was the moment where it clicked for me.
Yeah.
I was like, this is
like
fun.
Everything about it.
Yeah, and then, you know, dashing around with this gigantic thing. That set piece was awesome. That gave me, it reminded me of like Uncharted levels.
Yeah, let's talk about it right now, honestly. Okay. Let's just take a second. That blew my mind because I was like, oh shit. It didn't remind me of Uncharted. What it reminded me was of Ratchet and Clank with the rifting.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. And just taking that to the next level. It seemed like they looked at Ratchet and Clank and went, I think we could one-up this. And they absolutely did. And Star Warsify it. I love the blending of Meryn's magic, her Night Sister magic, with the Jedi powers, because we don't get to see the Night Sisters ever. And they are such a cool idea that like magic works beyond just the Force. So seeing that, you know, when you're in Jedi and you're seeing this drill, this just like what seems to be like this old a separatist drill, just drilling into the world, just trying to find stuff, just trying to, you know, find the base, whatever it seemed like. And then Cal and Meryn just mixing their magic up together to have this like weird, like fast forward, like
it was crazy
feeling. It just, oh my God, like it felt so
the
good.
Whole, like all of it, just literally even from like, so like literally the start of that chapter, I guess, from to like the end of it was like, it was incredible. Like literally all the before stuff of climbing just to get to like to get there, the back and forth between Meryn and Cal, like, because I was very much like at that point I'm like that was one of my biggest hopes coming into this game, was I was like, if they are not together by the end of it, I'm gonna throw hands.
Yeah.
Because like that relationship was so good.
Yeah. Jedi, what about you?
I think somebody said with their relationship that they didn't see how, like, I saw it somewhere that it's like, I didn't see, they're like, I don't see how, you know, Meryn kind of had those feelings. Where did those feelings come from? And I'm like, you can see that. Yeah, you know, granted, it's like, maybe you don't see all of it, but I can, you know, put it in my mind of like, I mean, you know, they've already been on a journey together in Fallen Order. Now they're on this more intense journey. So I can see, you know, time away, she's thinking about things, you know, she's a tangible character in my head. You know what I mean? I think she does have her own thoughts when she's not with us. So that's where I guess my head's at of like, yeah, I can totally see how they come to that conclusion. Now, the part that I really love about that, now tell me this, did you guys get the dashing part right when it happened? Because it took me a little bit. It took me a minute. That first one,
me a little bit, yeah.
I will say that
it's
when, after the whole cutscene of like you're running away while the drill's bashing in the rocks and literally you stop, it's after the kiss, where you're like, she's like, let's go. And I'm like, okay. Just like dive up and fall. And I'm like, where am I going?
I want to know the statistic, Katie, because I feel like we all may be the same person. Where once... If there is a big spectacle about to take place, I know I'm going to fuck it up. There's a lot of pressure to get it completely right.
I feel like that was so in the moment, though, because Cal just got kissed by someone who I feel like before that he was kind of liking already. And I feel like he was just like in dreamland. So that's his excuse for just being like, bye.
Yeah, when it comes to their relationship, I feel like it made sense since Fallen Order that like he thought she was a cutie. Yeah, for sure. And knowing that they've been together on more adventures since, and she is a another character. Time has passed. Yeah, they could very easily have a will they, won't they, Jim Pam relationship.
They're both similar, like outcasts. They're both
kind of. That's what I mean. Definitely, they've had similar situations where they both, in Fallen Order anyway, they were both young and they both lost their families through through the Empire and other means and all that sort of stuff. So shared trauma kind of brings them together. And and you can, I can see it. I can see it at the end of Fallen Order that I'm like, I can maybe potentially see a little something here. Like, you know.
When they leave, though, so now that they've, you know, had this time apart, that also just bolsters that, you know, that relationship that much more. Because, you know, like you're saying, they obviously did have a bond from the their past and it being so similar. But now seeing them apart and, you know, when they come back together, those now emotions are that much more. They understand how much they care about each other because of that distance that they've had with one another. You know, like, Seer is on her own path, right? She is trying to get the archive back up and she's trying to do her own thing. And then obviously Cal feels like his job is to be on the front lines because he has that power to be on the front lines. But when he talks to Marin about coming with them, it's a matter of, you know, he talked to Seer already. She's like, no, I've got to stay here. I got to do what I got to do here. And when he has that conversation with Marin, it's that moment of like, is she going to? And I'm sitting there, I'm like, do it, Marin. You can do, just be with him. Mm-hmm. Go on the ship. And she's like, I'm coming with you. And I'm like,
that's when I was like, yes. It's like, don't stay. Please come with me. Please.
Yes.
I want to get this out of the way now so everyone can yell at me. Okay. Here's when it comes to the story stuff for me, as I am a fan of Star Wars. I'm not a crazy big fan like all of you. I enjoy the movies, I enjoy the games.
Lately.
You already know, we've talked about this already. I, for one, was a little bummed when I saw Darth Vader again. Not because Darth Vader is cool. It's just like I feel every Star Wars thing has to have Darth Vader in it. And likewise to later on, which I think the aesthetics of everything was very cool. Like when you go in the skills and everything is red, like when Cal is like doing more dark side stuff, which was awesome. I feel like that also happens to almost every Jedi, which maybe it's the point, but I was a little bummed to see Vader again, even though playing as Seer in that moment was awesome. I would take a whole Seer game, if I'm totally honest.
And I think that's the part that gets me in with that, because I see what you're saying. Like, you know, it, and now that you do say it, it's like, well, yeah, that kind of does happen, because even with Rogue One, again, granted, it was a fantastic scene.
Amazing.
Beautiful. But they still felt the need to bring him in there when it they could have easily not had that in, and it would have, the movie still would have had, you know, its merits without that scene, you know, so I can see that. But the fact that we got Seer to fight against him,
and I think that's why it's a little bit more forgiving.
And now tell me this. So this is something that I kind of had a theory on. When we're playing as Seer, she is unbelievably powerful, right? Yes. Because she is a legitimate Jedi Knight. And I feel like that's a little foreshadowing of what we're going to see Cal and how powerful he's going to be in the third game.
So that gets me fucking amped. So the why I like Vader, Vader's the unstoppable force, right? So like in order to have the Empire be this imposing thing, you can't have someone that's kind of on that level of Vader. So you do, like, Vader in these games are more of the vehicle than the threat. So that's why I don't mind him being there, because if it's just like, you know, I don't know, douchey general number 47, it doesn't have the umph of like, oh shit, no, this is how big of a threat this is. They're bringing out the big gun. And the thing about the Seer fight, which I think we could get into here, what I love about it, this game does such a great job of tying in lore from everything. So the thing that makes that fight so incredible is something that's built on in the sequels, which is, it's not anyone who dictates anything. The Force dictates who's going to win and who's going to lose. And so that fight with Seer shows how capable of a fighter she is, one. B, how conflicted Vader still is, because he has a whole lot of anger and he doesn't know how to wield it yet. Again, he's on the hunt for Kenobi.
And that's kind of in his prime, at that point.
He's just untethered and his rage knows no bounds. And so, like, the third thing is, it all comes down to one saber swing at the very end. And you see her saber just misses him by a few inches. And it's the Force that dictates who won that fight. And the Force dictated that Vader would finish that fight. So that's why I liked the Vader sequences. And at the same exact time, it builds up what these games are building up to, which is, Cal is going to face Vader. So it's like, this is the impending, this is the unstoppable force, and they are building Kyle up to be the impenetrable wall that it's about to
hit. On that same note, though, aren't you just like a little disappointed you're going to know how that battle's going to end, though?
No, because to me, as a fan of like Kenobi, that is one of my favorite fights of all time.
Fair.
Because like, I feel like sometimes we get lost on the destination and rather like the point of the destination to begin with. So
the
like
between stuff,
the in-between stuff is really important and is worth going totally into.
Fair. Yeah.
So like that fight with Kenobi gave Kenobi the realization of the practically son I raised is dead. And that was way more like that scene of like, you know, you didn't kill Anakin Skywalker. I did. Makes the fight with Vader and him in episode 4 even more powerful. So though I know where that fight's going to go, it's either going to go in a stalemate or Vader's going to kill Cal or whatever. Like I still want to see that journey getting there.
Fair. Yeah. I get it.
One thing I was going to say just to, about the point of Vader is because obviously they do like to put him in like a lot of things. Like, as you say, Rogue One, Star Wars Rebels, spoilers for that, Star Wars Rebels, things like that. But every time I look at those situations, I think in my head, does it make sense for the story? And specifically in Survivor, I feel like it does because, as you know, it takes place alongside the Kenobi timeline, and we found out about the Hidden Path there. And the Hidden Path are specifically, you know, this group of like this rebellion monastic kind of group for Force sensitive individuals, Jedi, all that sort of stuff. And obviously, as we said, Vader at that point in the timeline is in his prime, and he is, as you say, he's got this intense anger against the Jedi, and his goal is to basically be like, I want to kill them all. I want to basically wipe them off the face of the galaxy. And to find to be told that there's this base on Jeddah where basically they are finding their feet and they're going to get more powerful, et cetera, et cetera. I feel like in my mind, it makes sense for him to be like, I'm going to lead this assault.
Yeah, I'll do it personally.
I'm going to do it personally.
I see it. Yeah. Back to that fight real quick. Cause I don't know if you were you got beat by Vader as much as I did. Cause I got lost a lot times in that fight. Did anyone find it absolutely hilarious that you, after you die, you just walk up and Vader's just in the sunken hole of the room waiting for you.
Yeah. Like when he's like round free.
Yeah, he's just like, all right, I'm just standing here waiting, so, I guess. All right, cool.
Come on down. Oh. Jedi, how did you like that encounter with Vader? What are your thoughts? Like him being there, the fight, and how it plays out.
So I honestly, I don't know if I really was expecting that when when Seer first started. I think the point, like, and again, that's why that the Seer and controlling Seer was the focal point for me, you know, because I didn't, you know, before we got to that point, Cal is obviously, he had just gotten knocked out, and then it cuts to Seer. And then you're just, I think it did the same thing that happened when it changed to, when the camera changed to Atreus in God of War.
Yeah, you're like, wait a minute, what?
Yep, it was very similar of that. I just kind of was like, wait, what? No, oh my God. And I mean, my mouth dropped as I'm just slaying these guys over here with little to no effort. So it was the matter of that where I was getting so enthralled in that I wasn't even thinking about Vader. And then Vader comes and I'm like, oh my God. First of all, I see what I just did back there. So I know now, I am capable of actually, you know, trying to defend myself with him. Am I going to win? As Kyle said, I know I'm not going to because of, you know, things have to happen.
And she looks ready for it. She looked like the determination on her face. She is ready for it. Like she wasn't shocked. You know,
arc is finished, and it shows in that point she is no longer scared. When she sees him the second time, or the first time, she is not ready. She is scared shitless. She's like, it's him. This time she's like, it's him. Let's do this.
I'm only just going to say the one thing that still comes to mind when I think of Seer and Vader is her first attempt at fighting him of Fallen Order. And it's just like, and she literally just falls down. That's always in my, I'm just saying on a tangent, that's always in my head at that moment. I'm like, definitely come far enough. Cause you know, cause he flicked her like a fly in that initial encounter.
Now, Jedi, back to you. Yeah, go for it.
Oh, I'm saying the other thing with Vader is that he, what is it, Seer, like, they obviously have a history with one another. So, like, him being there was very much of, it was also like, you know, I need to take out this archive. We need to stop them in their tracks and make sure they can't, you know, continue down this road and potentially come back at me. But also, he knew that Seer was a part of it. Like, he, that's another reason that he came down, was to finally stop Seer from, and take her out of the picture. So, there was these moments, and it seems like, again, with how powerful she has gotten, because she has gotten back with the Force, like, he might have been the only one, the only thing that could have stopped her from that. And that's another reason why I think he, what, he had to be there, you know? Yeah. And
to me, the other thing that's like the bonus is Kenobi can be there. If it's Jedi related, Kenobi can be there. Yeah. Sorry.
Yes. No, well, the fact that he, what is it, that he is there to begin with, that's where I thought that was a Star Wars cup.
No, Zelda, sorry.
But so I just, that's kind of where I'm at with that whole fight, realistically. I do like it. I like that, you know, it felt like he needed to be there to take out Seer. And like you said, her story did kind of come off around full circle. I'm glad that she was able to, you know, get back with the Force, because that was, you know, finding that out in you know, Fallen Order, of how, you know, not only Cal, but Seer as well had to completely cut herself off from the Force because she was so scared to fall into the dark side. And then to see her here now, it's like, I believe that she can't go anywhere. I believe that this is what she needs to do and what she believes she has to do with her power, just like Cal believes he has to be on the front line. And unfortunately, it did lead to this, but it was a fantastic fight, you know, like the fire, everything, the different stages of it. It was amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Before we get to the other, I think, really cool twist with Bode, really quickly, I thought of this. I want to get everyone's thoughts. Who is your favorite side character and your least favorite? Mine, I really, really, really love Z.
Okay.
I did like Z.
I like Z a whole lot.
The mannerisms. So she's like this old, like old school kind of medieval knight lady. Yeah. Or, you know. Uh-huh.
I like Z a lot, and I also love the I forgot her name, but she runs the barn, the stables.
Mosey.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I liked her a lot too. Least favorite, I hated Scuba Steve. With a passion. Just because it's a Big Daddy knockoff. I hated that. I was like, I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing here.
Okay. What about you, Jedi? Do you hate Scuba Steve? Are you Team Steve?
You know what? I forgot about Scuba Steve. I like Scuba Steve. I mean, he's like, hey, man, he's like, got another fish in you. Just listen to his story. Like,
the stories are great. I just really hated that his name was Scuba Steve. That's really it.
It's the fact that I want a Scuba Steve plushie. That means, you know, that tells you how much I like the guy. But it's also, you know, the fact that the thick Scottish accent exists in a galaxy far, far away. You gotta love it.
Yeah, it's cool.
I did find him just kind of an adorable little creature as well. He was kind of like a little, I don't know, snail with a mustache. And it was like, also one of the best things I will say, just for Star Wars fans, is he name dropped the Purrgil, which I'm like,
oh yes.
Space whales, essentially. And I'm like, I was like, oh my God.
he did. Yeah. I love, there's one where it's like, it's just a little puddle and he has like, he just like dives in. I'm like, dude, this is a puddle. Yeah. Like, where are you? What about you, Jedi? What about who's your favorite side piece, your side character?
Scuba is my favorite, and I would say least favorite, but I also, it turns around and I do kind of like her only because I got to see my man. It's Cage for the bounties.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't like her because you're going to turn your back on me like that. After, it's like, look, I've already dealt with Bode, and we will get to Bode, but that one hurt. Okay. Yeah.
So, oh, really?
And that's why I'm like, I don't even want to talk about Bode right now. So, but she, you know, having that in the story and hurt me so much to get to the very end of this, and now, and you want to come for me? You want to come for me? And then she's saying, she's like, you know, like, I need the money. I gotta pay these debts. I'm like, well, guess what? You solidified your debt now because you're not going to get me. And then the only thing that she gets a pass on is that she got Boba Fett into the thing. She brought my main man Boba Fett down, and that scene was fantastic. It was unbelievable. Dude, I took so many pictures, and the fact that they can both see, again, they can, you know, Cal and Boba, they're both going, and then Cal's like, you just here for her? All right, cool. And he's like, nope, listen, you don't mess with me. I won't mess with you. And I still went back and talked to him afterwards too. He was standing there and I was like, I can still talk to him. So I see what's going on. And I loved it. It was fantastic. And I'm like, see, you got your comeuppance. That's what it is. You got him. So it is what it is.
It is Tamara Morrison who is voicing Boba Fett as well, which I fucking love. That man loves this character. My favorite character, shout out to Turgle, aka Rasputin from Psychonauts. You hilarious, Invader Zim funny son
from
of
Invader
a gun.
Zim.
Yeah, Invader Zim. Goddamn. Love Turgle, dude. There's something outrageous and almost he's on the line of almost too much, but he rides it so well. Scuba Stev, I have a love-hate relationship with Scuba Stev. At sometimes I'm like, dude, this is fucking hilarious. He's a you can fit him in the palm of your hand. He's a little Scottish man, but sometimes the accent's too thick even for me, and so I'm just like, bro, I don't know what the fuck you're saying. I'm just gonna
I think you had that conversation with somebody before in your life. She's like, yes, yeah. Not in way, boys. Not
a
smile.
Uh huh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
I also love in two of the biggest games of the year, we have a Turgle and a Torgle.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. God, I love the banter between Square Enix and Respawn about that. Great. Being like, wait a minute.
Before we get to Bode, though, how did you all feel about, and I'll go to Jedi first on this one, how did you feel about the Dagan arc, the Dagan story? Because I heard a lot of people going, like, That was a tad too slow, or you know, the story is very back heavy. I want to know what your thoughts are on the first half of the game and Dagan as a primary villain.
I don't feel like it was back heavy. I feel like it was pretty well spaced out. You know, we do fight him multiple times. I think we only twice we fight him. It might be three, but I want to say it's only two times. Is it three?
Three. Fight him when you first break him out the tank. And then you fight him on the Lucra Hulk, and then
is that first one only a one stage battle, or is that two stages?
I think it's one stage.
Yeah, I think it's one stage. Yeah,
because that's right when he's getting out, he's trying to build up his strength and everything. So like, and again, I can see that, you know, maybe you didn't want to fight him three times, but again, it's to show you how well he's building up. He's getting back into the swing of things, right? But I loved having to go for Ravis. You know what I mean? Yes. And that fight was fantastic. To see that he wanted
he's
that,
made
like,
out
fight
of worms.
I love Ravis.
Like, it was intense and I loved it. And like the fight with the last fight with Dagan Gera, where he flies up and you're upside down trying to fight him and all of these different movesets and everything. He was bringing in stuff from in the second stage. I was stuck there for a minute. He probably killed me 15, 20 times. And I'm like, I had to turn it off one day because I'm like, look, bro, he got to the second stage and I finally got all of the first stage down. Cool. Got to the second stage and he's doing something, you know, he did one move that he had never done. I'm like, okay, go and start it again. He does another move that he had never done in the first stage. I'm like, bro, what is this? We've already fought 15 times. I've already learned. I'm done. I got to put it off for now. So, but I don't think it was back heavy. I really don't. I think it was well spaced out. I think Dagan's part of the story was very well told because, again, what got me and what got me invested was him burning his, or, you know, bleeding his Kyber crystal.
Yeah.
And like you said, we've never seen that before, ever. And I was like, I got chills and I was like, no, oh my God. And again, same thing. I've had probably about three or four times in this game where my mouth just dropped from what I was seeing. And it's mostly from just the story beats that were happening. Yeah. And that was one of them where I was like, I don't understand what do you mean? And then it obviously happens. Now he's, you know, the bad guy. And I feel like that having that at the beginning is what kind of made me want to continue down and see where his story goes and really see Cal take care of him. Because I'm like, he needs to be stopped. He is a force to be reckoned with. And realistically, it's Cal's fault for letting him go. We should have never let him loose in, you know, out of the back tank to begin with. We've got to figure this out. We've got to get this dealt with. And I feel like, you know, I would say the only tedious part was like, oh, he's got the map. And then, oh, he's got another map. Oh, we don't have the map, but now we've got another map. So we still can find our way over there. It's like, I wish we could have figured something out a little bit better with that, you know, of how to get to Tanner.
Too many MacGuffins. Yeah.
Exactly. But I do appreciate the story that, you know, what Dagan brings to the table, what he brings with Ravis. I was very intrigued with Ravis's relationship to Dagan because I'm like, why would you be following this dude for so long? You know what I mean? Like, he must have really like saved your butt back in the day for you to be following him for thousands of years. Well, 8,000 years, you know? And I'm just like, it's wild. It's still crazy. So figuring out all of that and figuring out how Ravis ties into Dagon, like, that's what I was really there for. And I felt like they did a really good job of kind of spacing that out. And then obviously the boat stuff happens. And then now we, you know, we transition over to focusing on him. But the Dagon part, I feel, was done pretty well.
All right. What about you, Katie? Well, how did you feel about the Dagon portion?
No, so same reason, similar to Ren, in the sense that seeing him from the get-go be so powerful with bleeding the crystal and everything like that.
So cool.
And every time you... And literally doing it before, almost like a Thanos snap at the finger, which is just like, okay, wait, what? This happens? Okay. And then every time you meet him, like in battle and stuff, and obviously he's got the one arm and stuff like that. And it's the second fight where I kind of picked up, like, it's like he is fighting you with two arms. Like, he has got one arm, but he looks like he is so powerful, but he's like, he's got both, like, his arms.
Like, you see him move in the sense that he's got it.
Yeah. That's the way he moves and the choreography of the fights and stuff is like, he almost looks like he is using like both his arms. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm like, he is whooping my butt with one arm. And I'm like, just goes to show how powerful he is.
Yeah. Cause that second fight where he's just like, and I'm going to, like, you know, I don't have an arm. I have two sabers.
But I'm still gonna this use
one's
going to
be, yeah, this one's just going to be spinning around. I loved that. I was like, holy shit, that's a way to, like, not only, like, give an audience someone that has a physical disability, but, like, to show them in a powerful, like, way. Like, he's not you know, undermined by the ailment. It actually is his power. I thought it was a really awesome way to channel that into a character that I thought was really smart. I'm sorry, continue. Yeah.
No, it's all right. One of the other things I did really quite... Well, I liked story-wise was that he seemed to be, like, obviously every time, you know, he was like one step ahead of Cal throughout most of his time in the game, and in my mind he was almost kind of like a mirror for Cal in the sense that, like, when Cal was on that journey, he was like, oh, you know, he was having, when he started getting properly conflicted, like, I think it might have been not long after Ravis. Or before fighting Ravis, but he basically kind of thought, like, I'm almost like turning into him at this point. Like, I feel like I'm getting so obsessed with this goal that I just don't care who's gonna get hurt along the way. You know, like, nobody else is important and is important to me apart from Tanalore getting to this place.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing I do love that is, like, you're right. He definitely, they mirror each other really well. So, like, Cal has, like, this obsession for the goal of this hidden base that we can then use to punch back at the Empire, right? They both want to punch back at the Empire, but for two totally different reasons. And so I feel like the first half, though, a bit slow, I feel like is definitely needed. I loved Dagon's character. I love how they tied everything into the High Republic. But I also love that mirroring. Yeah, I love when, like, Ravis is like, he's even... maybe even more powerful than you, and Dagon's insulted by that. And because Dagon knows, like, it's not because, like, Dagon's arrogant to it. It's he knows that they're really well matched. And then
seeing how, as you said, how akin he is to, like, Anakin was like the, I think it was the moment where Ravis was like, oh, will you let me go after, like, cause he's obviously got a life debt of some kind.
Yeah.
And he's like, will you let me go? And he basically kind of, like, I feel like, manipulates it a little bit in the sense that, oh, you can come with me and I'll let you start any war you want. Like, you can start any war. And I'm like, okay, Anakin, calm down.
Relax, bud. But then, like, you get this other side of Kim as well, where, or Cal rather, like, then you have, like, so you see that Cal can be obsessed with a thing. And that could lead him to the dark side. But then you actually see him deal with, like, the true like Achilles heel of a Jedi, which is attachment. And the attachment of Meryn. And
that's the thing that brings him, I feel like, that's the balance, you know? That's the thing. Dagon didn't have, Centauri was there, and when she wasn't, it was like, okay, he had just a bunch of yes men. And it's like, no one really to balance him and be like, maybe you shouldn't do this, you know.
And it's in you know, Cal's anger at in the base where he's betrayed, and he unlocks, you know, that you know, the Ghost of Tsushima mode. He activates the ghost mode and starts slashing through things. But it's also at the point where he's about to kill Marin Bode, and he unlocks that. Cal doesn't beat Bode with the light side. He beats Bode with the dark side, or a shade of it, which really makes it interesting.
Really quickly, yeah, before you move on to Bode, my favorite part about the Dagon stuff is they gave me Ravus, and I think Ravus is so damn cool.
Yeah.
And the life debt stuff, and then like that boss fight might be my favorite in the whole game. I loved his character, and the fact that like all he wants is just an excuse to just die. He's tired.
He's been at this for so long. He's just give me an out.
I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. And that
give me a warrior's death. That's what he wanted.
My favorite part about the last battle with Dagon is the phase where he like makes you see hallucinations. Mm-hmm. And the whole time you're in the fight, you see Bode in the background like dealing with, obviously he saw images of his daughter.
He saw shit too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I loved that he was that powerful to kind of do that kind of stuff to Cal.
It's just how that fight was turned on its head, and Cal was like, okay, I'm gonna use your obsession and your love for Centauri against you. It's like, okay.
It's really cool.
And so we'll go right into Bode. Holy shit. Nashir Dala. My god. Sir, you ate so well, you fucking killed every scene. And though I knew he was going to turn,
I had no idea.
Yeah, because smugglers and Jedis usually don't get along. Right. A lot of Jedi Survivor feels like, if they took these elements to The Last Jedi, that actually would, Survivor is what I feel like The Last Jedi, at least to me, should have been.
Don't shit on my favorite Star Wars movie.
I'm sorry. But, the way that they deal with that, the twist of not every smuggler is your friend is awesome. And then the double twist is he's an Inquisitor. He infiltrated. That's the moment I literally was like, gasp.
I picked it. So the moment when I'm like Kyle. I was like, he's fitting in, you know, because Cal, apart from BD, doesn't really have a best friend. I wouldn't even put Grease in that category because he's more of a parental kind of figure.
Yeah.
Mentor kind of figure. Bode is the best friend role. He was having conversations with him on the Luke Hulk about hey, I see you and Marin. You should lock that down. You should lock that down, you know. You should just get with her. And he's like the bro. Yeah. I was literally but when it got to basically when everything went tits up, as we like to say, when they're all by the bonfire and they're all chatting and all being like, yeah, we're gonna do this, so everything's kind of happy, and you're like, obviously my brain's like, everything's too happy, everything's going too right.
I know, and there's more to this game at this moment.
You can see in but I could see him, and I'm like, okay, he's acting a bit weird, but my brain didn't immediately go to, what, you're gonna turn on me? You're definitely holding information back, but I'm like, but I don't necessarily think it's bad. And then obviously when he then turns, I'm like, you mother trucker.
My favorite thing about that is once you beat the game and you you're back,
you can go back
and you find hear the echoes, all the things, and you hear everything that kind of
gives more
doing
context into why he did it
while you were doing your own thing. I was like, I love that stuff.
Dude,
that ties into what Katie was saying about the him talking to Cal on the ship or on the base, that about what is it called, about getting with Marin and actually being, you know, hey, go after that. He was
take the happiness when you can, there. Yeah.
He did that for on purpose, because again, one of those Force echoes, he understands that is how he's going to get him, how he's going to get to Cal. And now to see, going back and thinking that he pushed him to do that, too, it's like, it's not because he was his friend, it's because he had an ulterior motive. And it's so, I'm sitting here and I keep looking down because I'm so upset about that.
Dead to me.
Literally on the run up to the camp scene. So the gameplay up to the camp scene, I'm sitting there thinking, I'm watching them fight. I'm just like, God, I love Bode so much.
He's such a supportive friend.
He is my brother. And I think he calls him like, he calls him brother. Like Bode calls him brother. And I'm like, I felt that. I was like, yes, you are my brother. I love you, Bode. Like, you are such a good character for them to put in here. And then that happened. I was like, and like, I'm telling you, I don't think I've ever went from shock to immense anger in ever in a game. I was mouth drop, and then I went, I am going to obliterate you.
Yeah.
I hunted him down. So they who was the actor who did
Nashir Dalala.
He was also Katalu in Midwest.
He is also just fans. He is Admiral Rampart in Bad Batch. So he's been in Star Wars twice at this point. He was Admiral Rampart in Bad Batch season one.
That's
him. You'll hear the voice now. Obviously, he puts on a British accent for that, but you can hear it.
Yes.
It's cool.
Yeah,
I've recently watched season two, so I need to go back and watch one.
Bode is so excellently written, and he is so excellently executed. Nashir, man, just just nailed, just crushed it. The one thing that I love about Bode is Dagan offers you the light path of like, yeah, this is a black and white, this is Star Wars like thing, right? And then Bode introduces you a choice that is not. It's the gray path. It is the path that is of conflict. It's like the things that Jedi often turn to the dark side for. And you understand that, like, again, in a very smart way, that no, not every situation is good, good side, bad side. That, like, Bode does a awful thing, but he's doing it for, and a selfish thing, but he's doing it for what he views is good. And that is for his daughter. Because as a father, what is more important? Anything or your kin? And it's your kin.
Sounds like Joel and Ellie a little bit.
Yeah, I was thinking of Joel immediately. Yeah.
Very, very much so.
She stays with the Empire when he's out doing their bidding too. And you gotta, he doesn't seem like he's fully invested in what the Empire is trying to do. But this is just where he's at right now.
It's a lead means to an end. Yeah, it's a means to an end.
He's very scared. He knows, even if he's working for him, he knows that they're not the good guys. And he knows that his daughter's with them. So he's got to get her out. And I'm like, I can see how he gets to the thought process and how he can internalize that in his mind. It doesn't make it right because they're trying to tell him, like, we can all live together. It's like, it's Cal. Like, we're not going to hurt you guys. Like, but he doesn't want to do that. Which, again, he's looking out for his daughter. So I can understand that aspect.
But even the daughter knows that, like, what her dad's doing is not, like, she knows he's not a good person, that he has changed with the loss of his wife.
I mean, see when because obviously it starts out as like working for the Empire, deliver Seer, all that sort of stuff. And then obviously when Tanalore comes into the picture, he's like, okay, I'm basically just going to take this for myself and my daughter and nobody else can have it. Which I'm like, as I said, I can completely understand it, like from his point of view. As you say, it's incredibly selfish and incredibly just evil, I feel like, what he does. But again, you completely understand it. But then you get to Tanalore and you have that fight. And obviously, that's, again, I was getting glimpses of Anakin in the sense that, like, with Anakin and Padme, where he's like, he's doing all this to protect them, but he's almost like willing to hurt them to protect them. You know what I mean? Because he's like,
the daughter's begging him to stop. The daughter is begging him to stop doing this, stop hurting Meren. And like, you're seeing the rage has overcome him when they go to Tanalore. They finally have this big brawl. And so to me, though, I feel like it's still a bit of a leap that this little girl would be like almost unfazed by her dad dying. I feel like, no, it's a leap, but it's not as far as we have to jump.
I am glad that they didn't just... Going a little bit further, I am glad that they didn't have her basically see Cal kill him.
Yes.
And then she basically runs away and she's scared of Cal. So I'm like, okay, then I'm expecting her to be the bad guy the next game. And I'm like, that seems a bit too predictable. So I'm like, I'm happy with how that turned out.
That they're taking her under her wing and trying
rather than her running away and basically being like,
alone, like
gonna do the path of vengeance,
Yeah.
Um, I know, Joe, you got to leave pretty soon, so sure, I want to go through rapid fire a couple of things. Okay. First of all, I want to officially say...
Can I just say one thing? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sears' last line throughout the whole thing. That whole scene is fucking awesome, but I did think, because of how many bugs we ran into, that it was a bug when people were just like going like super fast through time, like when they were panning and he's like, he's buried Seer and he's buried Bode. I really thought that was a glitch, but it's awesome to see, like, he now knows, oh, he has to have the role of Seer and the role that he had, right? And Seer's force projection comes, or force ghost comes into play. She stands right next to her and or him and says, guide her through the darkness.
Yeah.
Which is a reference to Bode's daughter, Kata.
Yeah.
Fuck. So now we're going to have, in the third game, we're having two Jedis running around. We're having a Miles and a Peter
moment. We're also going to have maybe two, well, one Jedi specifically struggling with that temptation, because I don't think Cal's got a proper firm grip on it as of yet.
Nope.
And I feel like that's going to be one of the things for the third game. Yeah, he is still, I think, heavily conflicted. So,
and I think that was done purposefully to lead to have that battle with Bode end with that of him using the dark side. And so we can see, like, no, he's not, you know, he could go either which way at this point. He's kind of right there in the middle, and especially seeing how that gray area that Bode kind of presented, that's where we left him. And we're going to touch on.
And I'm sorry to cut you off here, because I know we're so tight on time, but that is the reason why, Kyle, I think we can even tie up why Vader is here, because remember the rule of two: there is never more than two. The apprentice will always try to overtake the master. So there is going to be a part in that third game where Vader is going to offer Cal everything in order to kill the Emperor. So he's going to have the come with me to the dark side. He's going to fuel the rage.
He's gonna make the cookies.
Exactly. And so that third, like, that crescendo isn't like, oh shit, is, you know, Vader's gonna obviously walk out of it. The question is how and if Cal can overcome his hatred for Vader. Sorry, go through your rapid fire stuff.
Yeah, just rapid fire. It's the official Star Wars Jedi Survivor Road to Greatness. So I want to just officially say, F those two stupid frogs. I hate them so much. That fight sucked. Joe was like, yeah, they respect your time and your history with the first game. No, they don't. Why couldn't I have grabbed that stupid tongue and take out half of my health bar in this game? Why was that not a thing? I hated that Scar fight so much.
Yeah.
So much worse now.
It's real bad. And I know I've come to find out Joe lowered it to the baby mode, which is fine.
I don't give a shit.
I played the game on the second easiest difficulty, and I never had, like, I had some friends who played this game on Grandmaster for the first time, and I'm like, maybe you shouldn't have done that, because I think that has affected your overall.
I mean, I played on Grandmaster, and that's what when I fought those two things, I was like, eh, fuck this.
I want to know what your favorite stance in the game was, and if you have any thought of, like, how they could make it better in the next game, because for one would have loved to switch between all of them on the fly.
Yeah,
kind of like locking into only two. I was like, man,
yeah,
like a weapon wheel or something,
or like how Final Fantasy 16 does it.
Yeah, just on the Switch. So like I pretty much stuck to the single blade. I didn't really mess around too much, except for when I unlocked the blaster. I enjoyed the blaster stance a whole lot.
I was the same single one for me, and then when I got the crossguard one, I was like, oh boy, because it felt so punchy. It felt like, you know if you I don't play Dark Souls or anything like that, but like Elder Scrolls with like a two-handed sword, it felt like that. Like, it felt heavy, and obviously all the powers you could do with it, like, felt so freaking like OP. Also, Cal did a drop kick, which I like.
Yeah,
you can drop kick when using it. To make it better, that was going to be what I was going to say, is essentially just let us basically revert through, well, all of them, or at least more than two. Almost like the holsters in Last of Us 2 and all that sort of thing. Just gives you more access to them.
Hopefully
that's something we'll get in free.
What about you, Ren?
I don't think that there's any more stances that they can add. If I'm thinking through it, like, I feel like we've got the majority of what we're, you know, the different styles. I mean, I guess they could kind of
would
go
we
crazy.
Say a stance like how Bode, it's almost like it's also the Ahsoka stance as well, is yeah. use like the backhanded kind of approach. Like that would be
ah,
cool.
yeah,
but I don't
like,
know if that's
yeah, a... interesting. And yeah. again, that could they could just, you know, from time to time you could change your footing in, and it would be footing. Like how footing is in like what is it? Like a UFC game or like a boxing game, but sure. with the different stances. So that way you could flip it up this way or you could flip it back and then kind of do it that way. But I definitely think letting us change through the five that we, you know, whatever stances they put in there, that needs to happen. But my favorite stance, at least from what I have, you know, I've dabbled in all of them. And what I came to, what, you know, the two that I like, first of all, I was like, I got to get a new one in there in my rotation as my second one. I can't stay with the vanilla because we've already played through the game with those. So I couldn't do that. I didn't want to do the single one, even though the single one is very balanced. That one is probably oh, yeah. like I did go to that for some like some boss fights. I think I actually defeated Bode with the single one, and that mm-hmm. was the only way I could do it. Every other lightsaber stance was not working for me. But the ones that I like the most, the double bladed and the dual wield. Those are my two favorite ones right here. I did use the cross blade for a while. I replaced that one with my single blade, but again, it is a heavier, it's a heavier weapon. It takes longer to wind up, and I'm very bad with longer to wind up weapons. I cannot, I can't figure out the timing with it. And I tried and tried and tried, and I was like, you know what? I'm just making this a lot harder on myself. We're going back to the double blade. So yep. I went back to the double blade. But I love the different, you know, the different moves that you can do with it. I don't think the jumping move where you spin in a, you know, you spin as you're going towards them. I don't know if that was in Fallen Order. I don't remember it if it was. No. So that was nice. It was, you know, and obviously the dual wield with the, you have the Viper stance that you can, or the Viper, you know, deal that you can do, or you can throw both of them at the same time. So I really like both of those. I felt like that one gave me the speed I was looking for with the dual wield, and then the double blade was just what I had come to know from Fallen Order. You know, I was very well versed with that one, so I was like, I feel like these are two good ones. Plus, me thinking of it like, what is it? Like Darth Maul, I'm like, all right, got my double wield, bam, break it out, now I've got my two of them. So it made sense to kind of put them together and back and forth and stuff like
that.
Cool. Yeah. How did you guys like the customization?
So that's what I loved. I finally found mine. So I, you know, when I went to go kill Bode, I was like, I gotta get the saber. So what I did, I unlocked all the sabers I could, right? And now I have like the finished one that I want. I have like a quick rapid fire question for y'all as well after this, but yeah, for me, I danced between all of them except the gun one. I actually didn't like the gun one that much.
The gun one I didn't really feel like using a lot. Just mainly in my opinion, because I'm just like, I'm a Jedi. I want to use my lightsaber, you know?
Exactly. I'm like, I'm
I
a
like
Jedi.
The,
this
I
is
like
a feel
the counter
right.
with it, though.
Oh, sure.
The counter was real cool.
Does it make it feel like Bloodborne? Because that's what
I fuck
heard.
Yeah, it does. A little bit. Oh, yeah. A tad. It's not like one for one, but like, it feels nice. But like for me, again, like I'm a Jedi. So I danced between all of them pretty well. I think I did the cross guard for most of it, but towards the end I did double-sided the staff, and then I did the dual wield. But when I fought Bode, I had to go single bladed because to me that's how that shit's supposed to go. Mm-hmm. So my quick question for all y'all, maybe Kyle, you have this down, but quickly, color, what saber we rocking? I rocked, all right, orange, yellow, and cayenne, because I feel like, you know, cayenne is like classic Jedi, but yellow and orange I felt like made the most sense for Cal, because at least my Cal was dancing on the dark side a lot.
Green. Fair. Just green, because it's the best lightsaber color.
That's fair. What about you, Jedi? What about you?
I went purple. Number one, it is my favorite color, and amethyst is my birthstone. So I was like, I've got to go purple. But also, like what you're saying, I felt like my Cal, I kind of had him. He's in that battle. He's in that in between, like Mace Windu is, where he can use the dark side, but he's more on the good side right now. We'll see how that plays out. But I felt like that kind of encompassed his character as well.
Yeah,
I stuck with blue, but I messed around with the hilt a whole bunch.
Whole bunch.
Until once I unlocked the ability to make it a Mets colored hilt, that's what I did.
Being able to customize Cal as well, just quickly, was great.
Oh my god,
That's one of my favorite additions to the game. As someone who
Commando likes, Cal, that's where it's all
sort of stuff.
I love the joke with the poncho too.
Yep,
I love that one.
Yeah.
I love that they had beards in it, because, I mean, Jedi need beards. I'm just like,
he had a beard. Did y'all see him on Star Wars, or what is it, for Celebration? He was on stage, and he comes out, he's just like...
He comes out in a poncho, we got a problem.
If they're going to be a poncho.
Oh, really quickly, before I forget, I told Joe this already, but I wanted to tell you too as well. I tried really hard to get Cameron on here today.
I
was going to be a surprise, just been, a little bit.
Oh my god.
I tried.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be saying anything. We would be talking, just being like, "Oh,
you play foul.
You talk. It's fine. We'll just shut up." Because honestly, can I just say before we wrap up or whatever that I just wanted to get in here that if he does ever listen to this, Cameron, thank you. But his performance in Fallen Order was—I'm going to be honest. I was going to be like, "It was good. It was good. That was it." Survivor, I think when it comes to the Game Awards at the end of the year, I am praying he gets best performance, because I know there's a lot, like Ben Starr will definitely, I think it will be between him and Ben Starr, probably. If I'm forgetting anybody else, I apologize, but I'm just like, I felt he was, I felt him, like I felt him so much in every scene. It wasn't just like one scene, like, or two scenes. It was literally every moment he was just performing so well. And obviously, like, not just voice wise obviously, because it's all motion captured, he was acting his heart and soul out. Like when Seer died, I was so emotional about that, I cried my eyes out. And obviously a big thing is because of him, his just wailing, you know, over it. And it's just like he deserves his props.
Hell yeah!
In this game,
for sure. Two more rapid fire things. What planet do you guys want to see in a sequel, if that we haven't already gone to?
So is this take it back to Tatooine?
I was going to say timeline wise, I want to see Naboo. You know, because Naboo is always Naboo's one of my favorite planets in Star Wars.
Naboo would be cool.
But I want to see Naboo.
You know. Yeah, I am gonna go normal. We're gonna go with A New Hope's Tatooine. I want to go see that. Yeah, I want to see that in, you know, on current gen hardware, where everything is realistic and everything, where you can just walk around it. Like, I feel like that would be so freaking cool. I love seeing Kashyyyk in Fallen Order. That was a huge delight. I was like, oh my gosh. So I want to see at least one planet that we've heard of, and then I want all new planets. I want to hear. Yes. I want to go like they did.
Yeah.
With this.
Yeah.
One thing.
I was also going to bring up an Old Republic planet, Nar Shaddaa. I would love to see Nar Shaddaa. It's kind of like a Coruscant-esque kind of planet, but I think seedier, if you use that word.
Go ahead, Ren.
How do y'all feel about the planets? Because like they didn't. There's the moon, and then there's the rock formation. And then there's three of, and then there's Kobo and Jedha. And I'm like,
another bummer. I wish there was more.
That was a bit of a bummer.
Felt, we're going back and forth a little too much between.
I would have liked to have seen more, definitely. But I feel they did a good job of like balancing things out. Like every time you went back to Kobo, it was when you had learned a new skill. So every time you went back to Kobo, I felt like it wasn't always the same. It's like you didn't go back there and there was just like nothing to do. Every time you went back there was always something new to do and new to discover. So I do like that aspect, that they kept making Kobo feel new every time you go back to it. And I feel like that would have probably been a hard thing maybe for them to balance out. Was like, okay, if we're going to keep coming back here, like how are we going to keep making it interesting and not just the same, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Kobo is such a big planet. It's so weird how like how many different areas there are, and it's very like they're different areas too. So like when you get to the ship that the Separatist ship, that is completely different in the swamplands compared to like where the outpost is, and then all of that area over there. And it's so weird how distinct everything is in there. Like you feel like you're on a different planet even though it's all Kobo.
Yeah, getting lost in those caves for sure. I got lost.
And I just want to shout out the ISB base at the end, because it made me think of Andor. It immediately made me think of Andor.
Oh my god!
Like in all those politics, you know, scenes with them all in the white costumes, and that's what it made me think of.
Yeah, God, Andor's so good. Please watch it. It's literally it's fucking art.
It's perfection.
It's art. Especially if you can, I get it. Like episode 5, 6, and 7 might be some of the best TV you could watch in recent years. I'm not even taking the Star Wars fan out of it. It is fucking incredible.
Well, on Road to Greatness, we rank our game on a trophy level. Platinum, obviously, being why aren't you playing this right now? Gold, obviously, a little bit lower than silver, bronze. Let's start with Katie. Katie, where are we ranking this on the trophy level?
I want to say platinum because it is so far my game of the year.
Yeah.
But I will probably say just because of some of the performance issues I had at the beginning and all that stuff, it'll be a strong gold. Just very, very strong gold. Yeah.
Absolutely. I get that. Ren?
All right. I am inclined. I was going to go platinum as well. But yeah, you know what? I'm going to go platinum because for a Star Wars game, this is the end all be all. As in, at least right now, this is the best Star Wars game I've played personally. And yep, I do think there's going to be more down the road. Star Wars Outlaws is on the horizon. I think that's...
Oh, yeah.
We'll have you guys back for that.
That's real good. I cannot wait for that. But for right now, this is the best Star Wars that I've played. This is the first game that really made me feel like a Jedi. Obviously, Fallen Order did too, but like this series as a whole. So I would go on a limb and I would say platinum. And I will say this too. Savoy Prime needs to play this damn game. I'm tired of
why does he not want to play it?
Yeah.
Why does it, is this a whole thing?
I would say so. I'm right there with Katie. I'm right there with Ren. It's like, all right, this is easily the best Star Wars game, hands down.
I've not played KOTOR, by the way, so there you go. But still.
Yeah. This is I respect what KOTOR is. Though when I was a kid, it was not, you know, me, I'm like waiting for another guy to, what? No. Like, turn-based? What? What are we going to do, hold hands with the Empire? No. So, you know, for me, this is the best Star Wars. It's one of the best stories that they've told. The performance issues are still bad, and we're a few months after its release, though I would be inclined to say those didn't impede my love for this game, and B, it's a Days Gone situation where, like, I'm thinking about this episode as it ages, and I think there's going to be people where it's just like, why did y'all waste like 5 minutes talking about problems? This thing was spotless. You know, listening to this like in a year.
That's like me with Cyberpunk, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's 100%. And so to me, I'm going to rate it a platinum, but with an asterisk. Okay. So, you know, it could sit on the council. It will not get the rank of master for me. You see what I did there? That was on the fly too. I did not think of that before. That's where it sits.
I'm a little mix of everybody here. I was gonna go with Katie with a strong gold, but it was a better analogy. It is a bugged platinum. I got all the other trophies, but the platinum isn't popping. It's on that level. It is one of the best games of the year
platinum
so
isn't
far.
Popping. I love that.
Yeah. Like, obviously grab it, but just be aware that it's not, you know, running as well as it can. But from the gameplay perspective, the world, I mean, we haven't touched on the soundtrack. Soundtrack's great as well. Like, you're going to have a good time. So, yeah, it's on the platinum level for sure. I just
keep saying, like, imagine if Tears of the Kingdom wasn't here this year. Game of the Year would be so lit. Because you're just like, what is it going to be?
It'd be a huge battle for sure.
I mean, yeah. I think it's still, as the kids say, lit. And I think because the trophy room won't have Zelda there, it's going to be so crazy. Like, this game of the year is going to be wild.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. In any facet here on, you know, Jeff Keighley's deal, like, anybody who's doing a game of the year list, it's going to be wild this year. Yeah. It's going to be crazy. That entire
especially the trophy room. But I think, like, the one, like, you really want to tune in for.
Especially the trophy room. Who are we talking about here? Come on.
Jeff who?
Yeah.
Jeff
exactly.
Who? He's hanging out with Kojima. It's fine.
Yeah.
We're hanging out with Ben Starr. He's with Kojima.
Exactly.
We'll have Cameron Monaghan. We'll have Ben Starr. Exactly. It's fine. Who cares about Kojima and Jeff?
Thank you, everyone, for supporting us on Patreon to allow the show to be a thing. Thanks to Ren and Katie for joining us. I'm so happy you guys got the nerd of Star Wars. Yeah, anytime. So buckle up and we'll catch you on the next stop. Bye.